Hi folks, welcome to the Money 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 podcast. I'm Surabhi Upadhyay and we come to you every week with some very interesting conversations to help you get your personal finances in order and get smart with your money. 8 months of the financial year are over, which means it is a good time to take stock of your investments and tax saving plan. Also, in case you have got any queries from the tax department, it's a good idea to get familiar with the e-assessment process, which is the norm from this year on. So helping us understand some of these nuances today is Mayur Shah, partner at EY. Mr. Shah, always great to have you on the show. Thanks for coming back.
Thank you.
So we thought it's probably a good time, since more than half the fiscal year is over, good idea to remind money viewers that they need to quickly get their tax savings and investments in order. So first things first, let's just go over some of the key changes that have been unleashed this year. And I think the biggest one of them all, this is the LTCG era. Now, this year onwards, the tax regime comes into play. So please just, let's revisit some of the key highlights in terms of tax changes.
Sure. So, the first highlight is that up till now, we were paying 3% of surcharge, which has been enhanced to 4% from this year onwards. So, there is a outgo which is happening from us in that sense.
That's one change.
Yeah. The second change is in respect of long-term capital gain arising on account of listed securities.
Oh, yes. The big market disruptor, the moment of budget 2018. So refresh our memories, rewind our memory as to how this is going to be computed and calculated.
Sure. So the way it works is that, earlier long-term capital gain tax was zero on listed security when if it is being sold on the stock exchange. Now what is going to happen, any capital gain arising after 31st January 2018, everything is subject to tax at the rate of 10%.
Correct.
However, what has happened is they have ring-fenced the capital gain accrued till the date of 31st January 2018.
Correct.
So, capital gain which is being there as on 31st Jan 2018 will not be subject to tax. Only the gain which is arising after 31st Jan 2018 will be subject to tax.
So let's just put this in terms of an example. Suppose you were holding shares, we can take any company for example, Maruti shares, and you've been holding them for 4-5 years and there's a substantial capital gain that you've made. Now everything is protected till 31st of January. After 31st of January, 1st February onwards, you were still holding shares, and let's say you are holding till at least till September or October, and then per share, let's say you've made a gain of maybe 500 rupees. I'm just taking a very hypothetical example. So now this gain that has accrued between 1st February 2018 to 31st September 2018, again, just taking an example, it is this gain, 500 rupees of gain, only this will be taxable?
You are absolutely right. Only this will be taxable at the rate of 10%. Let's assume that total capital gain arose on Maruti shares is, say, 2000.
Okay.
Out of which 1,500 pertains to the capital gain arose up to 31st January 18.
That is protected.
And balance 500 would only be subject to tax as far as capital gain tax is concerned.
So 10%. So technically, you're straight away looking at a 50 rupees per share kind of a tax liability. But there is that umbrella that was also provided, right? That I think in a year, you can have capital gains up till 1 lakh rupees
without paying taxes. So if your capital gain exceeds 1 lakh, then only it will be taxable at the rate of 10%, but otherwise it is not to be taxed.
So did you get any feedback through the year so far from investors, particularly from sort of medium range investors? Is the 1 lakh rupee limit or exemption, is that good enough to protect capital gains for most of the retail investors?
I don't think so, because most of the investors would earn more than 1 lakh. And therefore, it may not be
maybe in this year, maybe not, but in a good market year, absolutely.
Correct. But smaller investors would do get advantage, those who are in a low income bracket and, where they are being protected out of this.
Okay.
So the whole idea was that the high income earner should suffer some tax, as you see that dividend which is earned above 10 lakhs is also taxable at the rate of 10%.
Right.
So likewise, you know, they are just trying to see that what we can protect for the lower income bracket.
And there are absolutely no ways of coming around this. There are no exceptions. If you're earning capital gains above 1 lakh rupees in this era, there's a flat tax.
That is a flat tax.
Okay.
There is also some development during the period is that, you know, earlier there was a question in terms of if a person was holding unlisted security as on 31st Jan 2018, but that has become a listed security thereafter and being sold in the market.
So, for instance, you invested in a pre-IPO stage and then there was a listing. So
correct.
Then how do you compute capital gains?
Yeah. So, there, you know, they have said that even these gain arose till 31st Jan 2018 is also protected.
Okay.
And anything which is earned thereafter will be subject matter of taxations.
Okay.
The method in which you have to determine capital gain as on 31st Jan 2018 is whatever cost which at which you have acquired, you need to apply inflation index and arrive at a cost for 31st Jan 2018.
Okay.
Only to that extent it will get protected. Anything above that would be considered as capital gain arose after 1st February and it is being taxed accordingly.
So, even if the company did not list immediately after, let's say the company did not list on 5th February, 6th February, maybe the listing happened much later on, even then, whatever gain has been made after the 31st of January, that is taken as capital gain and there needs to be a tax on it?
That's right.
Okay. So, the values would be computed differently because let's say up till, 30th of April, this company was unlisted. So, maybe you'll follow that inflation indexing method. And after that, the company is listed, so you have a market value. So, then how is it computed?
Yes. So, the way it happens is that, say, a capital gain is calculated as of today. And then you will determine what was the fair market value as on 31st January 2018. And the way you need to determine is your cost of acquisition, which will be applied through inflation index and arrived at a new cost, which is a fair market, which is being considered as a fair market value as on 31st Jan. And that gain arose, so difference between the inflation index cost and the cost is considered as capital gain arose during the till 31st January 2018. And balance is considered as gain arose after 1st February.
Okay, all right. So basically, I mean, if you've got shares and if you had some pre-IPO placements as well, it's a good time to perhaps go and have a chat with your CA to figure out what your capital gains liability for the year is going to be. One more question on capital gains, actually. Earlier in the earlier regime, whatever capital gains you were making by selling a property, you could reinvest those gains in order to, you know, protect yourself from tax. These reinvestments could be on certain bonds, certain category of bonds. Is that protection filter still available?
That protection filter is still available. Mm-hmm. Earlier, this protection was also available for other than land and building. But now from this year onwards, it has been restricted to capital gain arising on sale of land and building only.
Okay. So which are the other types of assets where this is no longer available?
I mean, that could have been any other property other than immovable property.
Okay.
So, which was available, like shares or any other assets which you want hold, can be, you know, subject matter of taxation then.
Okay.
Now, the another aspect is that earlier these bonds were locked in for 3 years. But now from this year, it will get locked in for 5 years and not 3 years.
Oh, so you really have to park your money for a long time with these NHAI bonds, etc.
Absolutely.
If you want to avoid paying capital gains.
That's right. Okay. So, the holding period has increased from 3 years to 5 years.
Okay.
And the exemption limit is still 50 lakhs as which was there earlier as well.
So, you can protect capital gains up to 50 lakh rupees.
That is right.
By reinvesting the proceeds in some of these instruments. Okay, let's come back down to some of the, you know, big retail investor points for this year. There are certain higher deductions offered now on health insurance. I remember particularly for senior citizens, there were a couple of interesting points that were announced. So, if you could help us remember that again.
Sure. So, what has happened is that, earlier medical insurance and health expenses were limited to 30,000 for senior citizen. Now that has been enhanced to 50,000. So anybody incurring any expenditure instead of 30,000, you can incur up to 50,000, or you can claim deductions. So people don't incur such expenses just like that. Yeah. The other thing is that any medical treatment for which earlier the exemption was limited to 60,000 rupees, now that has been enhanced to 1 lakh rupees for senior citizens. Now, this is this medical expenditure is only for specified disease. So, one has to be very careful while you know, considering those deductions from the taxable income.
Okay, so for senior citizens, first of all, the limit of the premium itself has gone up to 50,000.
That's right.
And if you happen to unfortunately suffer from some of those specified ailments, there is a list you'll find there, then the rebate offered or the relief offered, the deduction offered has been hiked as well. So those are some of the you know, details. Apart from that, I mean, for salaried individuals, the only thing I remember is, of course, standard deduction, which kind of came back. Anything else that we should keep in mind?
Yeah. So, you know, for senior citizen, there was one more advantage which has been inserted in the law, is that up till now, interest earned on saving deposits or, you know, postal deposit, which one can claim deductions of only up to 10,000.
10,000 rupees, right? In the whole year, that too.
That too, whole year. Now this has happened that for senior citizen, this has, limit has been enhanced to 50,000 under a different provision.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So there, to that extent, there is an advantage for senior citizens. So it looks like that this year was for senior citizens.
Senior citizens. One can only hope the next year is going to be for the salaried class. We don't know. Anyway, there are a couple of months to wait for that. Now, we've quickly given you a rundown of all the key changes that are at play in this year. The other thing, a new thing that was introduced, was this concept of e-assessments. And this becomes important just in case you get an income tax notice or a query or some kind of question is asked by the IT authorities. So let's start from the beginning, Mr. Shah. Let's understand this. What do you mean when you say e-assessment?
So there are two key changes which has been introduced in the last budget. That first is that all the data which needs to be submitted, rather than submitting in physical form, you can either send it by an email or upload this data on the portal, income tax portal, and you can complete your assessment. The other aspect of e-assessment which was introduced under the law, and the scheme is still yet to be designed by the income tax authority, is that, you know, the assessment will happen not by physical appearance at all. The person who is assessing you, you would never know them. There is a team of assessing officers which will be centrally located and they will conduct all the e-assessment. The queries will be raised on the portal and you need to answer that on the portal.
Okay.
So currently what is happening under e-assessment is your own tax officer will ask query and he will upload all the notices on the portal. And from that portal, you have to download these notices and then, you know, you have to reply only on the portal.
Okay.
So, this is the e-assessment which is being followed. The later part of the assessment where you wouldn't know the tax officer is yet to be implemented.
So, what happens once a query comes in, and that too, I'm guessing it's going to come in this e-assessment format, or does it come also come like the old-fashioned notice or an old-fashioned sort of when you'd get a document from the tax department, does that still come?
No, so initial notices, because this were pertaining to the earlier period, initial notices had come in a physical form. But what happens now, they upload these notices on the portal. Therefore, each taxpayer has to have an account, need to know and visit that portal to identify the notices are issued.
But not all of us are checking our online accounts all the time to see if there was a notice or not.
Correct. We are not, and then that will become a bottleneck. But this, you know, this is being overcome because they also send an automated email to your registered email ID.
Okay.
The challenges which are arising is that, you know, while registering, I would have given some email ID. Say, if I'm working with another company, I would have given that email ID.
And if you're not using that email ID and if you haven't checked it.
Correct. And if it remains, it becomes inactive, then such notices are already posted on the portal.
Right.
And it is being considered sufficient serving of notice to an assessee.
Okay. Scary.
So, therefore, one has to just make sure that their profile, their details on the portal is correct, such as email ID, your address. And other relevant details.
Sure.
If it is not updated on a real-time basis, you may miss certain notices, certain orders which are uploaded by the tax officer on the portal.
Okay, so everybody get online, make sure your email IDs are correct and make sure you're checking those emails regularly, because whatever communication is coming from the tax department, it's now coming via through your email and through these e-assessment proceedings. Okay, fine. So now let's assume that someone has received some kind of a query or a notice. What's the next step?
So the next step is that he has to prepare the submissions. Queries are being raised in detail. So earlier notices were coming, please come and attend. Mm-hmm. So first you go attend, they will explain you what are their queries, and then you used to submit the information.
Hmm.
But now the assessing officer has already looked at the details or returns what you have submitted. They will ask, you know, standard questionnaires are there. They will ask all this information which you are required to submit.
Hmm.
Generally, the information is around your bank statements, you know, your asset details, your competitions, how you have arrived, and any documentary evidence in relation to foreign assets you are required to submit. And once you submit that, they will evaluate and they will come back if they have further queries, or generally certain, sometimes if you have given completed, assessment gets completed and the order gets uploaded in the system.
So when you're furnishing all these additional details which the department is asking for, all of this is also happening online. You're simply uploading scanned copies of all these documents. Is that how it's working?
Yeah, that is how it works.
Okay.
And there is also a limit of file that can be uploaded. So up to 5 MB file can be uploaded.
Okay.
So then you have to do it in tranches also. Some information you will submit, then, you know, so you need to break down your all submissions into say 3, 4, 5 depending upon the, you know, the size of files which you want to upload.
Sure. So I mean, the other thing is that, okay, let's say the assessee has submitted all the relevant details and assuming that the department is satisfied, at any point in time, is there any physical exchange of documentation or an acknowledgement or proof that, I, the assessee, have submitted everything and now this matter, the scrutiny is closed?
Yeah, so what happens when you submit the details, you get a transaction ID, and that's the acknowledgement that you have submitted all the information. Now what happens once the assessment gets completed, they will close the assessment on the portal itself, and they will, once they close the assessment, they will pass an order and they will upload the data.
Okay.
Now very important thing is that, you know, we need to just check, because this portal gets closed automatically 7 days before the close of the assessment proceedings.
Okay.
So the final due date for tax year 16-17 is 31st December 18.
Okay.
So 24th December when the portal will get closed. So nobody can submit any details thereafter.
Ah, so that becomes your cutoff date, 24th of December.
So one has to remember that, you know, you are doing everything before 24th of December.
Okay, so but this is still, I mean, slightly complex because of the different steps you sort of enlisted and the fact that you have to upload all these things. To sum it all up, what are the tips that you would like to give viewers in case viewers, I mean, have got any queries and they have to go through this e-assessment process? How to make it as, you know, less painful as possible?
Yeah, so to make it, you know, less painful, important aspect is that you submit details on time. Submit all details. If you do not submit all details, it may so happen that you will keep receiving query or it will be considered as a non-compliance. Because once they have requested detail and not submission, not submitting any of these detail, non-compliance can lead to penalty and prosecutions as well.
Okay.
Also, when you are unable to submit detail by that time, you still have a room to request for more time.
Okay.
And then submit within that more time. Many a times what we have seen the people make mistake is that please give us some time. And that's a very vague request for the tax officer.
Sure.
Then tax office will say some time would be a reasonable time of 7 to 8 days.
Okay.
Anything goes beyond that, they may not consider it appropriate.
Okay.
And then they will start considering as a non-compliance.
So if you, I mean, you can seek more time, let's say by the 24th of December, you're not ready with all your submissions. Then can you actually ask for more time?
Then it cannot be online. Then you have to really take a positive confirmation from the tax officer that he's allowing you more time.
Okay. Okay.
Especially when you are looking at 24th December.
Sure.
Because then within 7 days they have to close the assessment.
Okay.
At least they need 7 days to read your submissions and pass a final order.
Sure.
And they can pass order only up to 31st December. They cannot pass thereafter.
Okay. So basically, I mean, I think 15 December is a good deadline to keep in mind, self-imposed deadline, and try and finish some of these things
Absolutely.
Before that, you really don't want to mess with the tax department. Mayur, we do have one or two viewer questions that are coming in as well. They're not related to e-assessments, thankfully. I mean, these viewers just have simple personal tax queries. So Prashant Kolekar is asking, what is the meaning of preventive health checkup? Is there any additional deduction I can get for preventive health checkups under Section 80D? I do remember reading about this, but I'm not sure if this is over and above a limit. How do you sort of apply for this? How does one become eligible?
Sure. So preventive healthcare, it is not defined in general under the law, but one has to take a common meaning of it. Now, there is no additional limit for this. This is covered within the limit of 8ID of around 30,000 for self and family and 30,000 for parents.
Okay, so now, this is part of that limit, that is your insurance premium, health insurance premium that you're paying.
That is
so
correct.
So it's within those brackets.
It is within those.
Okay.
So, you know, any shortfall in premium, you can utilize this limit for preventive health checkup.
But, I mean, since there are definitions are not clear, for instance, if a doctor, asks someone to go in for a certain checkup, an MRI or any kind of an X-ray, etc., so are those kind of tests eligible to be counted under this category?
See, these are all deductions for the benefit of assessee.
Mm-hmm.
One can look at it liberally and try and claim those exemptions, deductions
okay.
as well.
Okay.
I don't think tax officer will kind of question or go into details on all these things.
Okay. But that's a good plan to keep, thought to keep in mind, that just in case you've not exhausted your health insurance premium limits and you have certain health checkups that you've done, OPD checkups, health checkups, perhaps that is something you can try and claim.
That is right.
Okay, all right. So that's something new that even I learned, something to keep in mind, just in case your premium costs are not that high. The next question is coming from Shreyas Nair. Again, a question on health insurance, by the way. How to claim tax benefit for medical expenditure? I'm guessing Shreyas might be talking about the specific ailments that we discussed earlier.
Appears to be. That's
okay,
right.
Yeah, we don't have him on the phone with us. But if you could just again go over the process of claiming this medical expenditure treatment.
So, you know, you have to just, if you have incurred this expenditure for specific ailment, you just need to total up what expenditure you have incurred. It should be out of your own bank account and not just you have the invoices or bill which you then claim.
Okay.
And
that's important. The money should have gone from your bank account itself.
That's right.
These
expenditures should have been incurred by the person who is claiming the deductions not by anybody.
So having
else.
The bill in your name is not enough.
Not enough.
Yeah. Okay.
And what happens is you have to just make a claim and in your return of income. You don't have to submit any documentary evidence unless the tax officer asks. But you should maintain all these records if in case during the audit. If tax officer has, you are able to submit that.
And as we discussed, the limit for senior citizens in this category has been hiked this year to 1 lakh.
1 lakh.
For the rest of us, where does it stand now?
It's 60,000.
60,000. If you happen to have any of those specific ailments.
That's right.
I think ailments like cancer, etc. would be covered under
some
of these.
That's right. Some specific ailments are there.
Okay. Fair enough. So those are two questions answered specifically with respect to health. Mayur, before we let you go, any final sort of tips, advice that you'd like to leave us with, as now people are going to think of investments, think of, you know, submitting those proofs to their employers as well come January?
Yeah, so, you know, the important thing is that currently no documentations are required to submit. Therefore, you have to maintain all this documentation in your hand. Also, the advance tax deadlines are coming up. 15th December is a deadline for the third installment and the fourth installment by 15th of March.
Mm-hmm.
Please make sure that, you know, we pay all advance taxes which are due. Otherwise, we'll be suffering, the tax.
And what are the cutoffs, advance tax payment cutoffs that you must meet by these deadlines?
So, by 15th December, you should be depositing to the extent of 75% of your...
3/4 basically of your total tax liability for the year.
And 100% by 15th of March.
Okay.
Right. So that's what you should have been paid paying that.
Okay. And this is for yearly tax outgo of how much? What's the total threshold above which advance tax is applicable?
So advance tax is applicable provided, you know, after deducting TDS, your tax liability is above 10,000.
above 10,000. I thought I was missing maybe, you know, I thought it would be 50,000 or something, even though that is a low figure. But in case you owe more than 10,000 rupees to the tax department over and above TDS, you do fall in the category that needs to pay advance tax. So that's just how the law is worded. That's how it's written. I think it's a good reminder. Thank you very much. I know I end up paying a lot of, you know, interest on a yearly basis just because advance tax hasn't been paid. So that was a helpful reminder to me. Thank you, Mayur, very much for joining in and sharing some of these nuances and details. And of course, we will call you back on the show because tax season will only begin come December, January. That's it on this week's podcast. You can catch the show at 6:30 p.m. on Tuesdays with repeats on Saturday and Sunday mornings only on CNBC TV 18. You can also find us on the CNBC TV 18 YouTube channel. Do send your feedback, comments, queries. Catch me on Twitter. My handle is at Surabhi Upadhyay. That's S-U-R-A-B-H-I-U-P-A-D-H-Y-A-Y. Don't forget to add the hashtag money. Catch you next week.